Hey, what's going on, everybody? Nate here. We have another weekly roundup for you with all of the things that have happened in the past week with pool. We are going to be talking about Shane versus Sky. We're also going to be talking about Thorsten Holman making it into the Hall of Fame. And then we're going to have a larger discussion around the Hall of Fame itself and a little bit more of a backstory as to kind of what it is, how it came about, and I guess kind of the reason maybe you haven't heard as much about it as you should have. So we're going to get into that in just a moment, but before we're going to get some of the announcements out of the way right away in the beginning, I want to give a huge shout out to Horacio. He has doubled his Patreon support in this past couple of weeks, and I wanted to give you a big shout out for that. Thank you very much. And if you are interested in becoming a Patreon to the podcast as well and supporting all of the future content that we are going to be creating here, you can do so at patreon.com/queueitup. It really is the best way to allow us to continue doing what we're here doing with the podcast and really trying to advance the game that we all love so much. So check that out if you would like. Plus, you get a lot of perks that come along with it, like some free swag, free lessons, as well as insider news, as well as just a lot of other stuff there. You can check it out at patreon.com/queueitup, and you can find out exactly what you get for perks there. So check that out if you would like. But we'll move on to. We're really trying to aggressively expand this month with the podcast, and I kind of had a kind of a call to arms, I guess, for the people who like the podcast but don't have the financial means to support it, or just doing something like that just really isn't something you're interested in. So I really made like a shout out to, hey, if this is you and you want to see the future of the podcast grow, or you want to really help us by just sharing the podcast and getting it out there. We're trying to get to 15,000 downloads this month. We've never gotten really anywhere close to that, and it's looking like we're not going to get anywhere close to it again. We're at about 3,500 downloads for the month right now. We're not quite halfway through it, but we're right on pace for about the most we've ever had in a month. It's actually a little bit short of the most we've ever had in a month, but it doesn't look like we're going to get there. If this is something that maybe, if you remember listening to that podcast and you're like, oh yeah, I would like to help with that, but you kind of forgot about it, or maybe you just didn't end up doing it for whatever reason, maybe you can, pause the podcast right now, head over to Facebook, Reddit, AZ Billiards, wherever you want to help us grow into, and give it a share. There's a few people that did it, and it's fantastic. I'm going to give you guys a shout out here in just a second, but I was, to be honest, just a little bit disappointed with the overall turnout of that, and I'm not totally sure. Maybe maybe there's been a lot of shares, but I can't see them because they weren't public. But still, I think it's a little bit less than what I was hoping for. And who knows why that is. Maybe there's a reason, I don't know. But we still have a little bit of time. We still have half the month. It would be awesome to be able to reach that goal. And like I said, if we do reach that goal, everybody who helped us out along the way is going to get free stuff. Depending on how much you help, how much you share, how much you work towards getting us this goal, you might get as much as a signed cue ball from Shane and Sky, and you might get a free t-shirt, you might get a free hoodie, you might get a free Queue It Up towel. We got a lot of stuff that we're going to give away if we can reach this goal. It's not looking like we're going to, but if you want to get free gear, it's not a raffle. This is not like something that maybe you'll win something out of it. You will get free gear if we can reach this goal. And even if we can get close, maybe I'll still be happy to give some stuff out there to the people who help along. So they say there is no free lunch, and I suppose there isn't because you got to do some sharing and some endorsements and blah blah blah. But you will get some free gear if we can get close to that goal. So like I said, sharing the podcasts, sharing the page itself, you can actually go to the Queue It Up podcast page, and up at the top you're going to have the opportunity to click the, I think it's a three little buttons, and then there's three little periods, and then under that you'll have the ability to share the page. Share the page, give a little endorsement, what it is, why you should listen, stuff like that. That's really going to be an awesome way to help us get out there and expand the podcast. And if you're willing to do it, please do. If you're not, then whatever. I mean, the podcast is still going to be here. It's going to be free. We're going to happy, we're going to be very happy to have you guys listening. And you know, you don't have to worry about it. This is for the people who are looking to do a little bit more to help us out and help us grow. So please do that if you're willing, and if not, don't worry about it. And I guess with that, we're going to jump into the podcast. But first, well, I guess let me give the shout outs to the people who have already been doing this already. So I want to give a huge shout out to Ben Brady as well as Mike Gaines. As far as I've seen, you guys were the only people that have actually shared the page itself. Again, I was in Oklahoma for Shane and Sky, so I've probably missed a few others. I'm very sorry for that. Just reach out to me and say, like, hey, I shared it here. I will get you written down, because, of course, you can't win prizes if I don't know that you actually shared stuff. So make sure that if you don't hear your name on the podcast right now, that you're reaching out to me and letting me know that you did do some stuff, and I will make sure to make it right. But as far as people that have shared posts, the podcasts themselves, thank you very much to Ryan Harmson, Derek Haugen, hopefully that's pronounced right, I'm not sure, Eve, Mark White, Sharon Reinhold, Marvin Tabota, and Tara and Chris Reinhold. Thank you guys very much. You guys are helping us grow, and you know, hopefully this turns into something a little bit bigger and that we can all benefit from it. So thank you very much. And without further ado, I am going to get into this podcast, and know that I did do a Facebook Live with Shane Van Boning. I was finally able to get Shane onto the podcast. So that is going to be dropping into your feeds in the next day or two as well. And so you're going to get this podcast as well as a one with Shane Van Boning. So here we go. Here's the podcast.
I'm a real deal. I shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
I can get uglier every time I see you. And now it's like frozen. This is so perfect. Look at that. Oh, it's bad. Oh, it was frozen right on your ugly little mug for about 5 seconds. It was fantastic.
Hey! Wow, there's no need for that kind of abuse.
Nope. I didn't mean
it. I thought I was here to give out abuse, not to receive it.
Well, yeah, but I got to get started off so I at least get the first shot, and so all of your abuse is justified. I don't want you to seem like you're a bad guy or anything. I just want everybody to think that you're just retaliating to, you know, my disrespect, and then you look like a better person.
That's fair enough. Thank you.
I'm always looking out for you, Jim, whether you believe it or not.
Again, so how are we all doing today? No, I don't believe any of it. I'm just going to ignore it. How's everyone today? How are you, Mike?
I'm good.
Yeah, doing well.
In Chicago.
Yeah. Is it raining down there, Mike?
No.
Just no. A normal.
It's been raining here for 48 hours, and we're on code red. There's floods everywhere. It's as you probably know, the Netherlands is pretty close to sea level. Parts of it is under sea level, so things are pretty wet. Good weather for ducks around here. Fortunately, I'm a little bit up and a little bit higher. So I'm not getting any hassles in the house.
Well, yeah, with all your money, you should be way up on the hill.
Yeah, my palace is fine. My jacuzzi is full.
Yeah, your moat is getting a little bit more full around exactly. Your house, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Your crocodiles are, you know, they're hanging out in your moat. they're really swimming, aren't they?
Yeah. Good for the wildlife.
Well, we're here to talk about some pool. So if you guys are tuning in, please give the stream a share. Help us get out there right away. I can't share it because I shared too much this morning. And if I do, I'm just going to get kicked off Facebook. So that's a bummer. So you guys have to share for me. We're talking Shane and Sky to start out with. So, Mike, what do you think? 150 to 114. What are your takeaways?
Well, it's, you know, it's someone catching a gear for sure. I mean, he was down after the first day, six or seven, right? And
five. It was 50 to 45 after day 50 one. 50
to 45.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, 100, basically 100 to 60 from there. So, it, you know, yeah, he put a pretty good 26 games in a row at one point with a 10 pack. That's pretty impressive. So, yeah, especially on a bar table. So, I mean, Shane, it's a great comeback from the Dennis match. And he showed what he can do, particularly when they're playing 10 ball. And it'd be interesting to see, you know, where they go from here.
Yeah. What you got, Jim?
It's just Shane doing what Shane does, and you know, he took a couple of heavy hits against Dennis. You know, but I mean, I'm sure Shane would also probably admit that Dennis is somebody that he can lose to. You know, I think he probably feels that, you know, there's nobody in the States that he should be losing to. Tyler's
outside of in one pocket, I would say.
Yeah, okay. We're on 10 ball, and you know, he's gone out there and Sky's got everything he needs to give himself a chance to win that. He's got the table size, you know. And Shane's, I think, the, you know, coupled with the two defeats against Dennis and the fact that, you know, Sky probably thought he had a chance, I think that's motivated Shane. And he's in stroke, obviously. You know, he's played a lot of pool recently. And he went out there and basically, you know, any doubters or anybody thinking, you know, maybe he's not the top dog anymore, I think he's put that to bed, because 150 to 114 is pretty substantial win, really. And there's not really anything more he can give Sky as far as, you know, your table size, your venue, whatever you want, you set it up the way you want to have it and I'll still destroy you. So fair play to Shane. He does what Shane does. And if anyone was doubting him, then he's put that to bed, kind of thing. Yeah.
I doubt it.
You doubted him, did you?
Well, I mean, I thought Sky was going to win this. I honestly thought that the break was not going to be an issue. I thought that both players would be making 2 to 3 balls per break. It's a bar table, and you know, you get those template racks on those bar tables. That side pocket's not very far away. It shouldn't be very hard to make those wing balls. It's whether or not you're getting a shot in it. I kind of weird. We'll talk a little bit more about the details of the match in a little bit, but Shane was actually trying to make the one ball on his break, which is a little bit weird to think about, because you're usually, you know, you'd like to play position on that ball. That's the one ball that you can control really well. Those four railers are, you know, they might run into each other. They might get kicked by the five ball or the ball inside the wing ball bank. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of balls that can run into that two ball and it could end up anywhere. So it's a little bit weird to think that he's trying to make the one ball. So he's basically playing to make 6 balls off the break, the 2 wing balls, the 2 four railers, the 1 bank on the side he's breaking from, and then the 1 ball. He's trying to make 6 of the 10 balls off the break. You know, I don't think he ever made more than 5 from what I saw, but that's weird to think about. And you're trying to actually make 6 balls on the break and have, you know, theoretically, you could have your first shot being, you know, the wing ball and the 1 ball. Or if you put the 4 and the 5 ball up as your wing balls, you could actually be shooting at the 6 ball off the break. That's kind of a weird thing to think about. You make all the balls that you're trying to make, you know, the 2 corner balls is your 2 and the 3, the 1 ball, 4, 5 is your wings. I mean, that's kind of a weird thing to think about. But
But all of them, you know, these are the 6 ball. I mean, you could take the 1 away, but the one does. It's not unusual for the 1 to go in one of the top corners. You know, you're trying to get it in that area anyway on the standard.
Yeah, about 1 by 1 is what you're trying to
do. The pot, like you said, all the pockets are closer. You know, all of those 6 balls that you've got a chance of making, they're all a higher percentage on the small table. You know, so why not have a go at all of them? You know, and I mean, I didn't see the match. It's just not a good time over here for watching those, and plus work and stuff like that. But I was trying to keep up.
You don't want to watch at 5 a.m. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. I'm working at 5 a.m.
Yeah. Are you finally back to work?
I am doing some work. Yeah, there are airplanes flying. Unbelievable. Yeah. but you see, you said that you didn't think the break would be such a big deal. I think. There's no table size that negates Shane's break and the advantage he has with it. It doesn't matter what the table size is. That break is always going to give him some sort of an advantage. He's also one of the quickest to figure it out and adjust if necessary. He's the smartest. He's got the most. He's got the most variation. He's got a B break, a C break, a D break, till a F GHI brake that he can fall back on if his main brake is not working. And they're all monster brakes, you know. So you can't negate his brake in 10 ball, regardless of the size of the table, I don't think. And he's just a better player. Also, I mean, as much as I love Sky, he's simply just a better player. He makes less mistakes.
And what we found out from the interview, I finished up with him. Even if his brake isn't working, you just throw a water bottle at the rack and see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, I think Sky has actually had a fair amount of success against Shane, in tournament play and in other things. So, I don't think Sky was intimidated. I don't think Sky's intimidated by anybody. But Shane, it's nice when you can make six balls on the break, because on a smaller table, you avoid any kind of traffic. It was interesting that they had, I think Sky, for, talking about, how easy the break should be on the table, he had 13 or so dry breaks, right? Out of 100 racks, and scratched a half dozen times.
Scratches. On day three, when he was actually starting to tighten it up just a little bit, he'd have just a terrible scratch. Like, not the, nothing kicked in, just straight into the side pocket.
Yeah.
But these are small differences when you're playing that game on that table with players of that quality. That one error, that one scratch in the break, the next time you come back to the table, your opponent's run a 5-pack, 6-pack, 7-pack. Quite easy for these guys. So these mistakes, giving the table back, can really cost you. And you mentioned about tournament play, and yes, Sky's got a reasonable record against Shane in tournament play. But now you're talking about 150.
Right.
And to hang with Shane at the level Shane has for that period of time, that's tough. Even for a player of Sky's quality. And he showed it on day one. He won day one, So he showed that over a certain period of time, he can hang with Shane, But there's more players that can do that. But it's natural. Over the longer the race, the more it benefits the better player, And most of the time, it's very rarely that a race to 150, the better player doesn't win it, or 100. Yeah.
Yeah. And taking a step back at it, there was a lot of people that had problems with they're using the Fargo predictive thing now, where they're kind of guessing as to whether, they're putting up percentages up at the top as to whether or not, what the percentage are that each player is going to win based off the Fargo rate. And, Fargo gets a lot of crap. At the end of the day, people think it's a joke. People think it's not really realistic. Some people, Jim, you don't think it works for anybody past 770. And every time I say these things, I just push back on it so hard. And I push back on it so hard. It's right so often. And if you actually break down the Fargo rate of this match, now this is just one example, right? But Shane is supposed to win this match 150 to 120 per Fargo rate. It's right around 119 to 121, somewhere in that range. You could throw in a little bit of a give up factor in there as being six or seven games, and that's right where Fargo says it should be. So that's number one I wanted to point out. I think that's an interesting thing to say. Over the course of 150 games, or 150 wins, I should say, Fargo rate's really close to being right. And I think
let me put it the other way around. If Sky turns around to Shane and says, "Let's play a race to 150, you've got to spot me 30 racks," do you think Shane's going to take it?
No way.
What is it giving you then, having that Fargo? I'm not completely against Fargo. I just think that once you get over a certain level, and you said 770, I think maybe a bit higher, 780, I think it's no longer a viable thing to use as far as calculating handicap. Because none of these guys above the 780 are going to give anybody anything, because they're all capable in their day of shooting lights out pool. So they're never going to give away anything above that. So the Fargo then, as a tool to measure handicap or a spot that needs to be given, is not going to be used. None of them, these guys are going to use it.
Yep, I agree.
I would agree 100% on that. As far as, you wouldn't use it at a pro level. You really shouldn't be spotting, right? At that level of play, it's like in other professional sports, if, you know, one football team is a 14-point.
Cleveland Browns aren't getting seven points on the wire, right?
No, they're not going to get, you know, they're not expected to take, you know, say, okay, we start the game winning seven. No, it's just, it's a convenient thing to look at and argue about and maybe bet off of or whatever. But as far as the players themselves using it to determine a handicap on a match, no, I don't see that at all. Not like you said, as you get over a certain level, it just doesn't make any sense.
No. Yeah, if people want to make side bets on matches based on what Fargo says the score should be,
right,
that's completely up to them. They go ahead and do that. That's fine. If you want to use that, then great, you know. That's my view of Fargo. I don't think it works on a pro level. I don't think it'll ever be used on a pro level like I said. You know, you're a professional player, you go up against a guy, if you beat him, you beat him. If you don't, then go practice and get ready for the next time you play him, you know?
Yep, I agree. So I guess I was actually on site for this one, which is the first time I've ever been on site for a big rotation. I've been on site for a couple of one pocket matchups, but I think it's really interesting because you get to see a lot of the things that were happening. Like, I don't know. I mean, if anybody here was watching from the stream, and Tracy's hanging out, and so is Paco in the chat room. They were both there as well. I got to meet them both. They're fun. But tell me, anybody else that's watched the stream, if this came across or not. Shane and Sky were fighting and arguing almost the entire match, from about 50 games into the match on, all the way through to the end. They were arguing, they were screaming at each other. I shouldn't say screaming at each other, but there was a couple times where they actually stopped the match so that they could argue. And it's a little bit weird that I've never, like I said, this is my first one at being in one of these things. And I'm not sure how common that is. I know that, Shane and I and Sky and blah, 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 went to the casino later on after the match, because we were both flying out. Shane and I were flying out at 6 a.m. So there's no real reason to go to sleep at that point. You're just going to sleep for 2 hours by the time it's done and wake up. So, and they, you know, they were cordial. They were talking there. So, you know, part of it is, you know, part of it is how much of it is just the heat of the battle, and how much of it is, you know, personal. It's kind of hard to say, and I don't think you'd ever get a straight answer on them, even if you could. But that's kind of a weird dynamic. Mike, have you been around to any of these in-person stuffs? I mean, these things don't really happen in Europe, Jim, so I don't know that you'd be able to answer this question. So,
Mike? I'll leave it to Mike. Yeah.
I don't know if it's fair to say it doesn't happen in Europe. I mean, you know, in Euro Tour, it probably doesn't happen, but if, you know, if a couple of guys in Europe are gambling all night, you know, I think that that's the type of animosity that just kind of creeps up in any kind of sport, when you're, especially over a 3-day period, you're going to get tired of each other. You're going to get, think someone's trying to do something. Or I think that that's normal with, spur of the moment, just your emotions getting out on you. So, I mean, I am a little bit surprised that it got as heated as you mentioned. I didn't see a lot of that. So what were the arguments mostly about, Nate?
Well, I know at one point in time that I'll just go to the biggest one, which I won't do any of the lead up for it, but Shane was on his phone at one point in time, and he might have had his hearing aids off. I think he might have. Sky's, you know, he's on his phone kind of scrolling or typing or whatever he's doing. And Sky's in the back left corner of the table facing right at him. And he just kind of sits there and is like, you know, he starts yelling at, like, you know, hey, you're going to get off your phone. And it's, it's in the day three, maybe early on in day three. Tracy, maybe you can remember and you can let me know. I see you're out there. It was early in day three. And basically Sky ends up just ripping his glove off, throwing it down on the table, and says, I'll come back when you're ready to play pool. And, you know, it's just, you know, little stuff like that. I mean, I don't think it's super personal, but it's just an interesting dynamic that I don't know that you actually get to see the full effect of that by not being there in person. Game five, day three. Yeah. So it was pretty early on.
So. Wow. It only took 4.5 games for him to get frustrated.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds to me like someone who sees the wheels are starting to come off and is getting a little bit frustrated, you know, when you're, you know, playing a possibility of 299 games over 3 days, and you can't you start losing your focus when someone's scrolling on their phone. you know, you're kind of reaching a little bit or getting a little bit of frustrations, getting a little bit of the better of you. I think that those are the type of guys that would, you know, once it's over, it's over. In the heat of the battle, you know,
I'll say this, this guy is absolutely a professional. I mean, he's goofy, but he is a professional. I mean, when it comes to being on the table, I don't think in my 15 years of knowing him, going all the way back to the juniors, that I've ever seen him do anything that I would consider shady or over the line. I mean, he is a consummate professional. He gets very, very goofy and silly off the table sometimes, but it's in good fun. Like, it just goes with his character.
Let's not forget. I mean, this match is, you know, there's money on the line. You know, there's money on the side on the line, and they both want to win. But there's more behind this match than any other matches that you see, you know, because this is two guys. This is one guy who wants to take the top spot, and it's another guy who wants to turn around and say, "Hold on a minute, you're not ready to have my spot," you know. Shane's taken a little bit of a slap in the face, you know, with not getting into the World Cup of Pool team, with it being Billy and Sky, you know. And there's people out there, and I'll say these are people that, you know, maybe aren't the smartest and don't really know pool very, very well, that are saying, you know, Shane's now number three. You know, these two are obviously then considered as being the top two in the USA, and Shane's past it. Shane won't get into another World Cup of pool. Is he going to get in a Moscone Cup? You know, people start saying, oh, that's the only reason that he's now stepped up to be vice captain, because then he'll get a chance to be in the Moscone Cup, whereas if other people were picking it, then he wouldn't get. I mean, all nonsense like that. And of course, Shane doesn't spend a huge amount of social time on social media, but I'm sure he gets to read these things, you know. On his Instagram. So you've got these two guys, one that's wanting to take that spot, you know, Sky's driven and he's thinking, you know, I'm trying to step up. This is the big guy. This is his idol. It was as a kid. This is a guy he always looked up to. You know, he's got the proudest photographs of him when he was a kid were standing with Shane Van Boning, you know. And Shane's there defending his position, saying, I'm not ready to step away yet. You know, yeah, I've lost a couple of matches to Dennis, but hold on a minute. This is 10 ball, you know. This is the USA. I'm Captain America. I ain't ready to give this up. So there's more behind it than just a little bit of money. So that will boil over, like Michael said, over a long period of time, of 3 days of them being in. You know, a couple of bad rolls go one way, a couple of flukes. I mean, I've had it myself, and I've seen it in short matches where, you know, it becomes the other guy's fault if things aren't going your way, and you'll find a reason, you know, to think that, you know, you're being sharp, or that the other person is not acting in the way that you think. And you'll find a reason to project any of your frustrations onto that person to kind of give them the blame for it. And I think that's the majority of the time that's what happens. And then when they sit back and think about it, they think, yeah, well, you know, I probably shouldn't have let that get to me. I don't understand why these rules aren't made in the first place. You know, they've got the time to sit down there beforehand and hash out all any little rules and stuff like that. I personally hate it when somebody's on their telephone if I'm playing and they're my opponent. I hate seeing them taking the telephone out, because it seems to me like they're not interested anymore. You know, I've had conversations with guys. He says, look, if you'd rather be on the telephone, shake my hand now and we'll call it a win for me. Are you not invested in this match anymore? Do you not want to? Are you just acting like you don't care to try and see if I'll relax and make a mistake? You know, you start to think about it. So why not just at the start of the match turn and say, you know, if I get irritated by someone on the telephone, I'll say, right, let's do
that. That's why Sky had the problem with it.
So they had decided beforehand that there was no telephones and Shane took his
phone.
Then that's a shitty move. Then if I'm Sky, I should go and sit down and I say, hey, we agreed on no telephones. Get rid of it. You know, yeah. If that was agreed beforehand, then it's a shitty move from Shane.
It was my understanding that it was. I don't think Shane was doing it out of. I think Shane was just, you know, he had missed a ball he wasn't happy with, and he wanted to just kind of remove himself from the match for a little while Sky ran out and just kind of do a mental reset. I think that's what it was. I don't know that that's what it was, but I think that's what it was.
Then you wait till the end of the rack and you say, listen, I'm taking 5 minutes. Simple. Yeah. The two of them are friends. If he turns around to Sky and says, listen, can I just take 5 minutes, just go to the toilet or whatever? I'm sure Sky will turn around and say, yeah, go ahead, buddy. He's not the kind of guy who says, no, you sit in your seat and watch me run racks. He's not going to do that, is he, really?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So
Shane should have handled that a little bit better. And if that's the reason why he did it, then he should have handled it better. He's a professional. He's been in these situations before, you know?
Yep. So, well, is... do you either one of you guys want to expand upon that? I have a couple more things I wanted to talk about on this, but if you have anything you want to expand upon, Mike?
No. I think it was a good explanation, you know, analysis by Jim. These things happen during matches, whether he was doing it on purpose, whether there was rules set. You know, I don't know what happened there, but, you know, people should be respectful when they're playing and respect their opponent. I know that it's, you know, in a pool room over 3 days, long sessions, they're going to get bored. I mean, hell, they were looking at their phones during Moscone Cup, if I remember correctly. You know,
a lot with the World Nine Ball. I thought that was just a terrible look to see players in the background on their phone.
I mean, that's something that, you know, the promoter or the players themselves should take care of ahead of time, and it should just be determined one way or the other, and then you stick to it. I think they shouldn't be allowed to walk in an arena with their phones, period.
Yeah.
You know, there's
nothing. They were doing it at the Championship League of Pool, and then there was some comments. I was one of the ones that went onto the matchroom forum and said, just tell them no phones in the arena. I mean, come on, we're the cameras are coming back after a break, and then they're sitting there on the telephone. This is not.
Yeah, it looks ridiculous.
It looks stupid. And then the Masters in the World Cup pool, they didn't have it anymore. So I thought, okay, they've realized this and they've had some feedback and they've listened. Yeah. But,
Well, that's the best case scenario. I mean, there's nothing worse than when you see somebody down on a nine ball and you see the camera kind of panning around, right? And the camera's panning around, and you see somebody in the background. There's somebody about ready to shoot a nine ball and you see somebody in the background going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and don't get me wrong. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, is it really a big deal? No, but could you imagine?
Bad look.
If you saw LeBron James on the bench in a Lakers game when he's in between, you know, he's taking a break at the end of the third quarter like he normally does, and he's down there on his phone tweeting out pictures. Could you imagine what the Lakers organization would do to him? He'd get fined $1,000 minimum.
Like you said, it's a small thing, but it's an easy fix. And it's just a little bit of a rough edge that could easily be fixed. But if you've got 20 of these rough edges on your production, then it starts to look amateurish and a little bit silly, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, if it's an easy fix, just fix it. That's it. Simple. Just no phones. Yep, okay. Done.
All right. So let's move on from there. I would say this is – so in being there, like I said, there's a lot of things that happen in the moment that you can't really see as a viewer at home. And this was one of the things that I thought was a turning point. And I don't know if it was the reason it was a turning point or if it was just, I don't know if it was causal or whether it was just correlated, but right when Shane goes out and for full disclosure, I guess Shane was telling a story about how in between his second and third, right in the beginning of day two, he was really frustrated. He couldn't get his break going. And he takes a water bottle and he goes outside and he chucks it against the building. And he said he threw it as hard as he possibly could. And he just chucked it against the building. And he comes back in and he wins 26 games straight. That also coincided almost perfectly with a huge rainstorm that happened. And, you know, Tracy's here. She knows how hard it was raining. There was cars 15 feet away outside the building that you could not see. It was raining so hard. There was so much water coming down in like such a small area that you could not see a car from 15 feet away. Now, that might just be, well, it's, you know, it's outside. What does that change? But that increased the humidity in that room maybe 15, 20%. Even with an air conditioner going on full blast, that room was so sticky. And right when that happened, Shane's break just flipped a switch and he was breaking the balls like God. Those are some things that, you know, you just think, well, finally Shane found a gear, right? Well, maybe Shane didn't find a gear. Maybe Shane was, and I don't want to say didn't find a gear, but the idea is maybe that humidity was just enough to make his break start working. And once your break starts working with players like this, it doesn't matter how bad you're playing. If you're breaking the balls good, you're going to start shooting the balls good. And that, you know, everything lines up, Shane starts playing run out solid pool, and he snaps off 26 games straight. Another thing that I don't know if you guys wanted to discuss that at all, but I just wanted to highlight it to the listeners that this happened. And I think it's a big thing to point out, because if you don't know that happens, you just think, all right, well, Shane, and maybe he did. Maybe Shane just found a gear. Maybe he moved his cue ball over a quarter of an inch and his brakes started working perfectly too. But I think the humidity going up in that room was a huge catalyst towards Shane making that comeback and really starting to put Sky away. And even on day three, after about game 7 or 8, it started raining again. It wasn't nearly as hard, but it rained for a solid 25 minutes in Oklahoma on day three as well. And, you know, I think if you get that humidity into the room up, it's possible that Shane's break just works better with a higher humidity level. Mike, is there anything you wanted to discuss on that?
No, I mean, it's speculation, and it could have affected it, of course. You know, I listened to the Shane interview, and he didn't really seem to bite on that in terms of whether he noticed a difference in the way the cloth or the rails were reacting. In fact, he said he didn't even know it was raining because he had his hearing aid turned off. I mean, it's possible that it helped him find that, you know, open up the table a little bit for him. You know, it's certainly possible.
Jim, anything? You struggle with this with your room a lot too. Like when you
it's been raining constantly for 48 hours here, and I went into my room to play. I've actually got my dehumidifier on in my room at the moment. I should actually check that. It's probably full of water now. It does. Of course, it changes the how your table plays. What it does is, and this is where it would possibly. I mean, like Mike said, it's speculation. Change the break a little bit. You know, the players are going into the pockets and pulling the balls out, or whether it's a run through table, they're taking the balls out. As the humidity goes up, your hands get a little bit stickier and a little bit clammier, you know, that's natural. So every time you're pulling the balls out and you're sticking them up into the rack, you're getting the balls a little bit greasier every time. Now, as the humidity goes up, they get, you know, before somebody turns around and says, look, we better give these balls a clean. Now, my understanding with a match like this, now correct me if I'm wrong, if Shane is on a run, he doesn't have to clean the balls. Can Sky at any time say, I need the balls cleaned? Because Sky's not at the table.
One time. They did not clean the
and
balls.
See, this is it. And this is where this is where I've seen discussions before. Somebody said, I want the balls cleaned. They said, no, I don't want the balls cleaned. They're working perfect for me. You know, I'm making balls in the break every time. And you can see the balls are getting dirtier and dirtier. There's no gloss. There's no the shadow or the reflection of the table light on top. Instead of being a clean stripe, it's just a blur. You know, you can see the balls getting greasier and greasier. So that's where the humidity comes in. The humidity within the table and within the rails and the cloth will not really affect the break that much, with the balls traveling such a short distance toward the center pockets in any case. But the grease on the balls will dictate how they pack a little bit. And if it shortens the angle towards the middle pockets or it lengthens the angle towards the middle pockets, it can make the difference. Yeah. But again, it's speculation. I really don't know. You'd have to, if Shane's not willing to say anything, then you'll notice that if the other player is noticing that things are the table conditions are starting to change. I guarantee if he was playing against Tyler Steyer, he'd have had the balls cleaned every third rack. but that's it. He loves his balls shiny, and he knows as well that if the humidity goes up and you're taking the balls out with your hands, your bare hands, and putting them in the rack, every time you're doing that, they're just getting dirtier and dirtier because your hands are more sweaty in the humid conditions. Yeah.
Yep. So let's move on, I guess, unless there's anything else, Mike, there?
Well, not for this particular match, but I just wondered your guys' thoughts on, you know, this preponderance of these long race action matches that in the past year, I mean, they've always happened, of course, but in the past year, they seem to be like the hot trend. And you know, what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I would say since Jim walked away there, oh, there he's back. Anyway, but I'll start this one out. And I think that as far as the viewers as far as the viewing interest, right? There's nothing that you can do outside of these long races that will garner more interest than a back and forth match that comes down to the wire. And that was like, that was Sky versus Dennis, right? You know, one of them would run 20 out of 23, and then the next player would come back and win 14 out of 15, and then, you know, lose five straight games and then win 10 out of 11. You know, there's just back and forth where you're just neck and neck, neck and neck. Somebody puts a huge package together. The other person answers with another big package, and you come down to the end and it's within, what did Sky win by, five games, I want to say? 150 to 145, I think, was the final
something
score.
Something in that range. Yeah.
There is nothing that is more exciting than that. I'm going to make the claim across the industry. I mean, it's for me, but I have to feel like there's nothing more exciting. How can you create something more exciting than that? However,
you have to wait 2.5 days to get to that point.
Well, yeah, it builds, exactly. Right? It builds, right? So the idea
is, call me when it's 130 to 130.
Yeah, right. Well, the people who are there the whole time, like, it's building that suspense, right? It's building, and it's getting more and more and more interesting as you go on. It also, these formats also have the ability to be the most boring thing that you've ever watched in your entire life when it's day three and one of the players is up 60 games, right? We saw that with Shane and Jason the last time that they played. Now, Jason made a great run at the end of it, but I think going into day three, he was down nearly 30 games. Mm. So, you know, if you're playing a race to 100, no, I think they played a race to 120 is what it was. I think that's what it was. But either way, if it was a race to 100 and you're up 30 games, I mean, what the heck are you really watching for on day three? Unless the player makes a big comeback, and that's, you know, that's fine, but it also could be really boring. Like when Chip played Tony the last time and Tony won. I mean, Tony won by like 9 games. What are you watching for on day three? It's So I would say,
I mean, it's
race of 25's best 3 out of 5 sets or something like that. I mean, those are more interesting as far as they're going to be exciting all the way through. Even if one match is a dud, I mean, you're just waiting 15, 20, 30 minutes, whatever it is, and you're getting your next one. But I don't think those ever reach the level of high as far as interest, as far as building up suspense, because it's kind of gets, you know, it's boring, starting to get exciting. It's exciting. It's over.
It doesn't really matter, because you're still going to have people watching on day one, day two, day three, regardless of what the score is. Because they'll make some sort of bet, regardless of what the score is with somebody, and then they're watching it. They're not necessarily watching it to see a massive comeback. They're watching to see if, you know, if they're going to win the under over on whether or not the guy that's way down wins another 10 racks or whatever in the rest of the match. You know, it's they're always going to have a vested interest and therefore watch it. I'm personally not a big fan of them, because I'm not a big gambler, so I find 150 to be too much. Like I said, okay, I maybe tune in and buy the pay per view if it looks like it's going to be a close and I only have to sit and watch it for maybe 3 or 4 hours. I'm not going to invest 3 days of time watching these guys play from zero when I've got no vested interest in it. You know, it would.
And that's my whole point, is that if there wasn't $100,000 in the middle or $40,000 in the middle or whatever it is, I don't think anybody's watching it.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm going to try not to punch my microphone. At the end of the day, I think that you're splitting hairs on these things, and I think it's interesting no matter what. Now, is it the most optimal way of doing it? Maybe not. I mean, maybe best 3 out of 5 races of 25 is the optimal way of doing it. But I think that you're still going to garner this, for the most part, the same amount of interest either way. Do you agree with that, Mike?
Yeah, I imagine so. I mean, you know, it's mostly a gambling vehicle for the players and for the sweaters. Yeah. And so that's what makes it interesting. I mean, the races are so long, you could have, you know, multiple bets along the way. You know, who's going to win today? Who's going to be the first to this? Who's it? Whatever. Mm-hmm. You could bet on anything. But if you take that element out of it, I just don't think there's a lot of interest.
There was somebody, the day of that, it was $1,000 bet on whether or not there would be, the over under was 6.5 racks. That would be the largest pack ran. that bet lasted exactly 7 games.
Yeah, right. Sky would jump right out of the gate and put that away.
I mean, Sky broke and ran the first 7 racks.
I was going to say, seriously, over under 6.5. I think if you're given that kind of number out, you're only ever going to lose really with these two guys playing on a bar box.
I think by the end of it, there was only 3 runs.
I think there was only
3 runs over 6. I mean, that's still 3 runs over 6. But I would have personally thought there would have been more. I would have expected I'm talking over 6. I think I said last week that I expect there to be the high run. I thought what it was going to be 8, 9, or 10, and it was 10, and that there would be several seven and eights. And I think there was, I guess there's a total of 3. I think Shane ran an 8 and a 10, and I think Sky ran a 7. I think that was the highest.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what Tracy just verified, that 7, 8, and 10. I would have expected a few more sevens, maybe 2 eights, but yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So
it just it's just gotten to be the big thing these days is, you know, everybody's got these big, you know, head-to-head matches, long race head-to-head matches. Just I wonder where that all came from.
I think you said it right. I think it's just a motive for gambling, right?
But I mean, it just seems in the past year that it's really blown up.
I think a lot of it is maybe pool starvation, right? It's been so long, especially with the backers, right? I mean, it's been so long since we've had gambles, right? And a lot of these people who are putting up, and there's a question out there by Juan Franco, how much was in the middle? From what I was told, it was $775,000-ish in the middle. I mean, that's a long, a lot of these backers, they crave this kind of gambling, right? They crave this kind of sweat. And when was the last time that they could do it with COVID? I mean, there really hasn't been a matchup for over a year. I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing so much of it now is just we've been so starved with these big matchups for the big dollar amounts, not the little $10,000 ones. And I don't want to, say that $10,000 isn't a lot of money, but $10,000 to some of these matchups is absolutely pathetic to where we've had one matchup that was, if it wasn't over $1 million, it was very close with Sky and Dennis. And now we have another one right here with $775,000-ish. $10,000 matchup is nothing. It's nothing compared to that, right? And we've seen 2 of those this year. So I think part of it is just it's been so long, and I think a lot of these backers want to get back in there and sweat some action.
Yeah, could be.
I mean, personally, I don't mind them playing for 3 days, but I personally like to see it being more, numerous sets, shorter races. I think that's a better way. And the backers can still gamble; they can gamble in individual sets. There's much more. I think there's much more exciting than there. If somebody does run away with it, they're only losing one set, or winning one set gives a chance of the other guy to get back into it. You can win one set 25 mil and lose the next one 25-4, and you're still at one set all. You're never really out of it, and it's never really a blowout. There's still always the opportunity to get back into it. So, I mean, I like the idea. I think there's more pressure. I like the idea of shorter sets, but numerous sets, I think, would be a better idea.
I always thought this was an interesting story. Johnny Archer came onto the podcast, and he was telling a story about how he played Francisco Bustamante 3-13. And the first set, he loses 13-12. Johnny does. The second set, he won the flip and broke and ran 13. The third set, he lost the set 13-12 again. So in total, he ended up winning 37 games to Francisco Bustamante's 26 and lost $15,000. So
that's the argument against the sets is that the player who wins more games and loses the sets, that's going to be the bitch. So
but that's the same in any sport. I mean, you look at tennis. Tennis has got one of the, in my opinion, tennis has got one of the best scoring systems of any sport. And you can win one set 6-0, you lose the next set 7-6, you're still at 1-1,
right?
But you've won a lot more games, but you're only at 1-1,
So I guess the last thing that we can discuss for this before we move on to the Hall of Fame voting, I would say is who's the bar box king? And I asked this to Shane, and Shane said he's not really interested in having the title, so he doesn't really care about it, but What do you guys think? Does this change anything? Do you think we have to say that Shane is the best, or do you think Sky has still enough track record that you can't take it away from over one match?
Is it important?
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, who cares?
is it important? No,
seriously. So who cares? I mean,
probably. I mean, it's probably not important. But the idea is that
is there a 4.5-inch pocket champion, a 4-inch pocket champion, and yeah, exactly. We start breaking this stuff down so much to that it between the games and the rules in the games and it's the whole picture is constantly muddled in pool. And I've always thought that's one of the things that's kind of held it back was no one knows what pool is. Mm-hmm. Because there's just so many variations of everything and so many, this is on a 9-foot, this is on a 7-foot, this is, template rack, this is whatever, 3-ball, roll. It gets goofy. Yeah. And so my point is that, I don't think there's any real point to having that title.
Yeah. There's a reason why the title doesn't really exist.
True.
Yeah. I mean, people call themselves the king of certain things all the time, but really it doesn't really matter. You're as good as your last match and you got to go out and do it again the next time you do it. So it doesn't have any value to Sky to have it. It doesn't have any value to
well,
Shane,
fine, if we start calling him. I didn't want to have that conversation anyways. Jeez.
Yeah, the Barbox title, even with the Barbox title, you got to pay $3.60 for your coffee at Starbucks. So there's no real value to it.
No.
All right. Well, let's move on. Well, you know what? I'm just going to get the heck out of the way, Mike. Why don't you take over from here and talk about the BCA Hall of Fame?
Oh, this is your show, dude. The BCA Hall of Fame.
This is your baby.
No, it's not, and it just I just happen to facilitate the voting and getting the people together and helping to organize the banquet, things like that. But the Hall of Fame is it's my baby in the way that it's very important to me, and that doesn't make it my baby alone. It's very important to a lot of people. I think a sport, for the sake of history and longevity, something like a Hall of Fame lends a lot to the sport. It's a way of recording history and of congratulating, and honoring the people who've played it for years and years at a top level. So I'm very passionate about the Hall of Fame and period. I think it's really important for us to honor these guys. Over the years, it used to be a very weird system for electing players to the Hall of Fame. When the BCA first started the Hall of Fame, it was essentially just decisions made in a boardroom with BCA board members who were manufacturers of tables and cues and pool room owners and things like that. And it became, it was a little too much in a back room for me. And then it was, it could be like friends, you'd push certain friends to get into the Hall of Fame. And then it transitioned into being voted on by members of the BCA, which was even more farcical because that became essentially all the exhibitors at the trade shows were members of the BCA. And so you had people who sold, fireplaces and lawn chairs who would have a vote in the Hall of Fame. And it got to be, then it just got to be kind of a popularity contest. So it was really important to me and to other writers who cover the sport to eventually have the voting for it transition to a group of writers and promoters and followers of the sport who could objectively look at records and vote on it the way it is in other sports. So that to me was one of the biggest changes to the Hall of Fame over the last 20 years, was shifting the responsibility of election to people who we thought, were really qualified to make those choices. And so now what it's voted on is by, there's a group of, between 25 and 30, what we call media members who cover the sport. And there is a half dozen or so, special invitees who are promoters or historians of the game. And then there's living Hall of Famers, and that collection of people vote on the Hall of Fame. So I think over time, the system has become really more equitable and more objective. And I think that was a big thing. And I think it shows by some of the people who've been elected that other people may not know as well, or, you know, may have been deceased or whatever the case is. And so they're not forgotten. And so, you know, like I said, the Hall of Fame to me is just a really, really important thing for a sport, particularly a sport that's got the history that pool has. And it's important that you get the election and that Hall of Fame done properly. And I think that that's what's happened over the years. And this year, you know, Torsten Holman, yeah, congratulations to him. I think he's kind of a perfect example. You know, not the most flamboyant out there, you know, known pool player, and kind of tends to fly under the radar regardless, you know, of his great resume. But, you know, as I wrote someplace, you can't hide a good resume. And so the voters saw that this guy had the best qualifications to be elected this year. And I think it was a great choice.
Yeah. If you don't mind, Jim, I'm going to just ask a few questions, because to be honest mm-hmm. with you, even though I was a pretty big promoter of the game, I think the Hall of Fame really slides under the table still as, yeah, we know it exists, and we know very, very loosely as an organization or as a pool world kind of what's happening. And maybe we'll find out that Thorsten gets in. Maybe we'll find out that Darren gets in. Darren, Mika, and Jeanette Lee, I believe, were the last, and Kelly Fisher, I believe, were the last five to get in.
Gerda Hofstetter. Alex Pegulayan. Has gotten in. Yeah.
So I follow the sport regularly. So the idea is, like, I think that there's, and I talked to you about this when I was asked to be a part of the voting block, which I'm still incredibly humbled by that. So thank you for that. But I kind of asked, you know, can I make the voting public? Like, can I say who's on the ballot, and can I say, you know, a little bit about each of them? And you're like, I don't care. We've never done that like that before. But I think it's very important, because if you look at, like, the football or basketball or, you know, the MLB Hall of Fames, you know exactly who's on the ballot, and you know the exact breakdown of how many votes each person got, and whether or not they're short or whether or not they're, you know, they're going to be into the Hall of Fame. This Hall of Fame works a little bit differently than the other Hall of Fame. So if you wouldn't mind, why don't you take us through actually how the voting happens and how you actually get into it? You said earlier there's about 60 voters in total. So how does somebody actually get in?
So, you know, what has happened in the past decade or so is that to qualify for the Hall of Fame as a player, you have to be above 40 years old. You have to have played for 10 years. You have to have won a major title in the U.S. or abroad as recognized by the BCA, since it's the BCA Hall of Fame. So, you know, there are certain elements that kind of basically automatically get you onto the ballot, like in baseball. Once you're out of baseball for 5 years, you're eligible for the ballot, whether you get put on the ballot or not. You know, so you know, if someone is 41 and has won the U.S. Open, and hasn't won another tournament in his life, he would still qualify to be on the ballot, right? But then only the top vote getter gets in. So, you know, there's an opportunity for two people to get in the same year if they both get named on 80%+ of the ballots. So, because what is, you know, Nate, with the voting, just as in baseball, you vote not just for one person, you vote for anyone on that ballot that you think deserves to be in the Hall of Fame based on their record today. And so that's only happened once. That happened the year that Johnny Archer and Allison Fisher both turned 40 and both got on the ballot in the same year, and both were named on virtually every ballot that was turned in.
Just say they better be, right?
Right. So to me, it's, you know, it's another way of showing that the system works. So that's, you know, that's how people get voted in. I mean, we send out the ballot with everybody's resume, and making the ballot public ahead of time I've never had any problem with that. We've not made a big promotion of it in the past because, you know, the voters get the ballot, so they get to vote on it. I suppose it would be good to let people know ahead of time who's on the ballot. And, you know, because even in sports like baseball, football, whatever, people will then politic and lobby and advocate for certain players to get more attention. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, I think that voters should, you know, call each other if they feel strongly and say, why is this guy getting ignored? I don't understand it. You know, things like that. So, so that's kind of the way the system works. And then we send out the ballot and it comes in and voter A voted for five players, voter B voted for one player, and you just tally up all the votes, and the leading vote getter is the person who's named into the Hall of Fame. This year that was Torsten. He finished a couple of votes ahead of Dennis Urkola. And because we only do one a year, essentially, in the greatest player category, you know, it's a tough Hall of Fame to get into. You can be a great player like Dennis Urkola, and it could take you four or five tries to get into the Hall of Fame. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's actually something that's good. It makes our whole Hall of Fame really exclusive. There should be a really high bar to get into it. And that's, you know, that to me adds more validity and more credibility to the Hall of Fame.
So then, just out of curiosity, can the public know how many, like you kind of said that Torsten got two more votes than Dennis Arcoyo, but can the people actually know how many votes they got in total? Or is that
the press release that came out this year, you know, mentions that you know, there were 40 ballots cast and he was named on 24 for 60%, whatever the case is. And then you know, so saying the total numbers that each person got, I don't see any issue with that. I mean, I sent that list out to all of the media members. Whether they choose to share that information or not is entirely up to them. You know, we're not going to discuss who voted for each person, but the total votes they got, sure, that's fair game. I mean, that's a transparency issue, and people, you know, there's nothing wrong with people knowing that this person, you know, Niels and Corey Duell were 12 votes behind.
So then the voters, so there was 39 ballots cast. Of course, I was one of them. Are we able to disclose those publicly after the announcements are made, or
voted for?
Correct.
Yeah, sure. You can, you know, I've seen that in other sports where sports writers say, you know, this ballot came out and this guy's not in. I voted for him again for the fifth year in a row and he still hasn't gotten in. And this is your platform for advocating for someone or arguing on someone's behalf. And that's fine. You know, you don't talk about who anybody else voted for. We don't let anybody know who everybody else voted for. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, Jim, you just out of curiosity, I don't know, you know, if you follow things like who gets into the BCA Hall of Fame. You were there for Darren's induction. You know, when you look at the players out there who are over 40 who are on the list, guys like Torsten and Urkola and Corey Duell and Niels Fayen.
Yeah, I'll go through the list here. Shannon Dalton, Corey Duell, Niels Fayen, Torsten Holman, Jeremy Jones, Joanne Mason Parker, Dennis Arcoya, Stefano Palinga, John Schmidt, Vivian Villarreal, and Charlie Williams is on the belt.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Torsten gets in.
Yeah, I try and keep up. I think the Hall of Fame in any sport is a great idea. My one, would I call this a criticism? I'm not sure I would call it a criticism. I don't feel that 40 is old for a pool player. I think that players can still achieve a lot after that age. Look at Ralph, look at Darren's making his comeback. I mean, Shane's just turned 38 today or yesterday. So 40 isn't old for a pool player, and I think we're in a situation now at this moment where you have a group of, I would say, probably about six or seven players that you know are going to be the next six or seven winners. In what order, we don't know. It's pretty much guaranteed that in 2024, I guess, or 23, that Shane's going to get 24. Shane's going to be the inductee in 24. So 24 is dead. You know?
No, because like you said, I mean, there could be two people in there as long as you get over 80%.
Yeah, okay. But Shane is getting inducted in 2024. That's pretty much
it. That's for every sport.
That would be
too,
right? That would be the biggest shock in any sport, yeah, if that doesn't happen. And I think there's still a lot to be. Yeah, but I think there's still a lot that a pool player can achieve past their 40s. And I think that, like I said, it's creating a slight bottleneck at the moment, I think, of players reaching that age. Yes, it is. It's a great honor, but I don't know. I feel 40 is quite young to be in a.
Well, it's
considered
it's,
as let's celebrate what you've achieved in your career when you're still got things left to achieve. You know.
So maybe
that's
Mike,
a tough subject.
I've lost audio. Yeah. Is it just me?
You there?
Yep. You guys can hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah, so it's just you, Jim.
Can you hear me? I can't hear anybody anymore.
Yeah, we can
hear you. I can hear you. I'll hold up signs.
I can't hear anybody.
We can hear you.
Maybe unplug and plug back in.
No, I can hear you.
Okay.
I would say, like most sports, Mike, sorry, most sports, they wait till you retire for 5 years, but pool, it's not like football or basketball where like you retire when you physically cannot compete with your peers. I mean, we've seen from Warren Kiamko, Francisco Bustamante, even Efren now that you can compete with your peers long into your career. So what's the point really of retiring? So that creates a harder thing, a little bit harder of a starting point for.
Yeah, no, agreed. And that's one of the reasons I think that we came up with 40, and actually the BCA came up with it before the media group took it over. I mean, before that, there really wasn't even an age requirement. Gene Belukis got into the Hall of Fame when she was 27, you know. So, but she had already won everything under the sun 9 times. So, you know, and 40 just seemed, you know, you don't want to wait too long. You know, you want to honor players, I think, not at the peak of their career, but when they're still out there, when people can still see them on a monthly basis at an event, I think that that's an important thing. I like going to tournaments and having Hall of Famers introduced as the next match on table 7, you know, as opposed to, you know, guys who get into the Hall of Fame and you never see them again because they're 60. So, and really in pool, you know, at 40, you've already probably played 20 years as a professional player. That's a pretty good yardstick, measuring stick. And yes, players can still win after they turn 40. They're not dominant players generally after they turn 40. I think Ralph won a title after he turned 40. I think Francisco did. But overall, even guys like Johnny Archer, you know, after he got inducted, you know, there wasn't a lot of big things added to his resume. And I think as the game gets even more widely played internationally and the competition gets stiffer, it gets younger all the time, I think that, you know, it's going to be tougher and tougher for these guys over 40 to beat, you know, Josh Filler and Albin and Fedor and these guys on a daily basis.
Albin's an old guy at this point.
Yeah, he's what, 30? So, so it's just, you know, we just kind of felt like 40 seemed to be a good age. I think you've got a pretty good career established by then and you're not, you know, off into the sunset because, you know, let's face it, pool is not a sport that does a great job of taking care of its own. So when players do stop playing, you just don't ever see them again. You know, sponsors aren't flying them in for meet and greets at tournaments. You know, when Buddy Hall stopped playing, you just haven't seen Buddy Hall in the last, you know, 8 years, whatever it is. So, so I do like the idea that you still see these guys around.
No, that is good. That's actually a very good point. It is nice to, I mean, I've even played in tournaments now where the alongside Hall of Famers and against Hall of Famers. So it's great that you can actually, you know, you get the opportunity to play against a Hall of Famer. So now what you're saying there is now that they're still active enough to be seen and to enjoy the accolades, I guess, which is quite nice. Yeah.
And now you get to brag, Jim, that you're 1-0 against a Hall of Famer.
I am 1-0 against the, I am 1-0 against the entire Hall of Fame. I have never lost against a Hall of Famer.
That's technically, it. I haven't. There you
go. I think they're electing the wrong people.
Well, let's talk about that now, Jim. You can give the first opinion. Thorsten Holman gets in. What do you think? Is it deserved?
I just mentioned there's a group of them that I think will get in within the next years. Just depending on which order, and Thorsten was one. So was that Neil? I think Neil's is a lock as well for a spot at some stage. Dennis will be a lock for a spot at some stage. Then you've got obviously Shane coming up towards his 40s. So there is a group of them that are going to get in one by one, just which order. Thorsten was one of them that I thought would get in at some stage. He's achieved everything that he can in the game. He probably should have achieved a little bit more as far as the big televised events. But for different reasons, he never really got that opportunity. I mean, he could easily have had a Masters, a World Masters on his resume as well, a World Cup of pool. I think he got a World Cup.
He did. Yeah, he did get a World Cup pool with Ralph.
Alongside Ralph. Only the last time he actually played in a matchroom event.
Ralph.
He could have won more on the global televised side of it. But other than that, he's won everything else. World nine ball, everything you can win as a 14-1 player. He's done it all. Great player.
He did get an invite this year to the World nine ball too. He was there because I think he knocked out Mika. Ralph knocked out Mika. Maybe he wasn't invited.
No, he was. Thorsten was there.
I thought he was there. I thought he was there. Yep.
Yeah, I think he did take Ralph out either into qualifying or into singles, and then he lost to Albin in what was, I think, 8-8 at one point.
But great player, one of the top guys over the last 20 years. You can't argue with the selection. He just has to be in there, and he does the right things. He's a proper professional. He's very. He does. He's not. He's a like he's Marmite. You know, we call him people like Thorsten. We call him Marmite. You know, some people love him. Some people hate him. Whatever. He's just Thorsten is Thorsten. You know,
he's just a little bit of an odd duck.
He's not like everybody. You know, he's a consummate professional, and I think he's one of the guys that you can put that green jacket on him, and you can say to up and coming players coming through, you know, we're inducting this guy in the Hall of Fame, and this is a guy you could learn a lot from the way he handles himself and the way he's gone about the game, keeping himself incredibly fit as he's getting older. You know, you talk about the ages and stuff like that. When you get into 40, you know,
girls and eggs you've made up.
Sorry.
You saw how many of those bicep curls and sit-ups.
He's a fit guy.
He's
eating well, you know, and he's eating well. He's looking after himself. I think he'll be around for a long time, hopefully. And, well-deserved, 100% deserved. Yeah,
I agree. So, Mike, do you care if I go next?
No, next of that.
All right. So I will, for full disclosure, I did vote for Thorsten Holman to get into the Hall of Fame. So I voted for three players. I voted for Niels, Dennis, and Thorsten. And I think if I'm not mistaken, I think I gave a little bit of an analysis.
Oh, sorry.
Rookie move, Jim. Rookie move. I gave a little bit of, analysis to Mike when I sent all my picks in, and I think I said the easiest choice that I had was Thorsten. I thought that he was the most deserving. He's won how many world titles in 14.1? Is it like 4, 5, 6, something like that? He's got 2 9 balls. He's a six or eight time world champion, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I mean,
it depends how you define the 14.1.
I'll stay off of that.
Mike's got to be careful with that. What's recognized as world title or not? Yeah.
Yeah. Again, of course, you start getting into weird areas there.
Pool world.
Yeah. So I thought he was the most deserving as far as an ambassador. I think it was I shouldn't say that. I think it's a toss up between him and Niels as to who were the most deserving. And a lot of the Neil stuff, I think that Thorsten's resume is slightly better. But what I will say about Niels is that that guy was more of a professional than any player that's ever came out of the game of pool, in my opinion. And if he's not the most professional, he's very, very close to it. You ask any junior player in the U.S. basically, or Europe, who your favorite player is, and I would lay odds and say that more than 50% of them will say Niels Fein. And that level of impact on the next generation, I don't think that you can just toss that away as not being part of the resume. I think that character matters, especially when you're talking about the greatest of all time. And Niels has it more than probably any player I've ever seen in history, personally, anyways. So that's why I think it's a toss-up between those two. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, no, Niels, you know, class act all the way, proper guy, proper professional, always takes the game seriously. Another guy who keeps himself really fit. Another guy who never looks like a bum. He certainly has the resume. And you talk about character, and certainly that comes into play. And it's, you know, one of the things that I always talk about with things like Hall of Fame voting is that if you have, you know, 60 voters, there's probably going to be about 58 different sets of criteria that people use to determine who they're going to vote for. It's a totally objective thing. So, or subject thing. And it's, you know, there's certain things that I weigh more than other people might weigh. And there's certain things that, you know, to me, character does come into it. To me, major open championships come into it much more than, 12, 16 player invitational events, you know, things like that. So everybody's got their own measuring sticks for how they determine who they're going to vote for. And there's no right or wrong answer. You just have to determine for yourself. It's like when people vote for an MVP in a sport, there's no defined definition of an MVP, right?
And so it's definitely not most valuable player. That's definitely not the
so it's so it's yeah. So, you know, everybody's got their own ways of voting for it, and you have yours, Nate, and you kind of explained that to me a little bit when you sent in your list of choices. And it makes sense because it shows that people are on the right track as far as their way of analyzing someone's resume. You may put a little more weight into one area than I do, but that's fine. There's no right or wrong. So as long as we have voters, I think, who are serious about it and look at it objectively and know how to look at a resume and say, this is important, this is less important, whatever, then we're always going to make the right choices on who gets in there. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
As I say, it's got to be a combination of different factors. You know, it's not all about who's poured the most balls over the last 20 years and who's got the most trophies on the wall. You know, you're putting that green jacket on somebody that they have to be a representative of what you want to, what the sport should be. You know, somebody who's, you know, the not just won stuff, but they've given back maybe a little bit. Mm-hmm. They've represented the sport. They've kept their nose clean. The thing, you know, like you said, you know, me personally as well, I would look at US Opens, International Opens, Moscone before I would look at how many times have you won races to 100, 100, just because we were talking about that before, you know, how many money matches to 150 have you won, you know, wearing a baseball cap and your flip flops, that's, you know, or have you, you know, gone through 128. You know, that would be my personal kind of criteria as well. And I think, you know, my vision of a Hall of Fame is walking into like the Masters at Augusta, and you've got the pictures of all the players that have worn the green jacket, and they're all in a row. You know, and when I look at who I think should be in the Hall of Fame of pool, it's somebody whose picture I could foresee on a wall somewhere with their Hall of Fame jacket on, representing that I've represented the sport in the correct way over the last 20 years and just happened to be goddamn good at it as well.
Yeah, sure.
And one of those two is not enough. It's not enough just to be really good. You have to have done the right things and given back a little bit as well. I think that's just as important, you know?
Yeah. So did you have any thoughts about Thorsten that you wanted to give out?
Me?
No, Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no. I mean, again, I'm delighted for Torsten. He's a great player. Certainly had the resume to do it. And just going to go back to a little bit of what Jim was talking about with how you evaluate people and look at people and you weigh this more than that. You know, you get into different eras of pool too. What was the competition like during one era over another? What were the fields like that they played in? I always look at things like, you know, did someone dominate over a long period of time? Did someone dominate a year? Did someone play over a long period of time and just, you know, slowly build up this Hall of Fame resume? Or did someone win, you know, 10 titles in 3 years and then never won another title? You know, so there's different ways of looking at it. Darren was certainly a guy who you looked at and, you know, as far as American pool goes, it was a 10-year career. But he just knocked it out of the park for those 10 years. So, and then you look at other players whose career was 25 years and had maybe the same number of titles, maybe not even. So they were always at the top. So, there's no set parameters for someone getting in the Hall of Fame. We just look at players like this and everybody's got, you know, everybody who has a vote has to look at it and say, okay, I think that, you know, this person has it. And there's some people who just don't like someone, so they're not going to vote for them ever. And, you know, they've got their favorite players or buddies, but the system overall is going to work over time, you know, because someone who, you know, I've heard people say, well, why is so-and-so on the ballot? It's a really weak resume. Well, maybe, but they've earned their spot on the ballot. And if it's a weak resume, they're never going to get voted in, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Ashley De La Cruz, Sky's still the king.
Yeah, so that's Ashley.
Hi, Ashley. that's awesome.
And he will, you know, hopefully he'll have his day getting a green jacket too, but he's got a lot of years ahead of him.
I thought we established a couple of years ago that Joshua was the king.
That's right.
He had a Burger King hat to prove it, right?
McDonald's, only McDonald's for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we can leave the conversation there, I think, unless there's anything that you want to wrap up with. Go ahead.
I am going to stick something in there because, you talked earlier about, you know, is there anything we want to promote? The Hall of Fame banquet is going to be October 29th in Norfolk in conjunction with the International Open Pool Tournament. So any fan who's thinking of going to that International Open to watch some of the action, it's a great, great tournament. Keep your eye out for the Hall of Fame tickets and come and join it. It's a great night. There's usually, 10 or so living Hall of Famers who all attend the banquet as well as the current inductee. It's always a fun evening, a lot of great banter, a lot of photo opportunities, a lot of autograph opportunities, things like that. So, if you're out there and you're thinking of coming to a tournament, consider the tournament in Norfolk at the end of October and come by the Hall of Fame banquet and pay tribute to these guys who've put so much into the sport over their career.
And more importantly than that, buy us a drink. Right, Mike?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm always up for that.
How's this? You buy us two drinks and we'll introduce you to the Hall of Famer.
Buy us three drinks, I'll make you the Hall of Famer.
Is that what you did with Darren?
All right, so
Darren's never bought anybody three drinks, so that can't have been right.
Yeah, no.
Oh, that's funny. So Mike, when are we going to see you on the Hall of Fame ballot?
Not while I'm alive. It's the old Groucho Marx line. I'd never support a club that would allow me in as a member.
there's only one, I think, Barry Hearn, who's a non-player, who's on it.
There's actually a meritorious service category, and that usually gets voted on every other year.
Okay.
There's not one every year, and that's what Barry Hearn got in meritorious service. Greg Sullivan from Diamond Billiard Products got in as that. So there's a number of people in the meritorious service wing of the Hall of Fame, all people who have done a lot for the sport over the years. And, yeah, Barry was Perry's right at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was glad to see him get in. He deserves it.
Yeah, it was a good night. I was at that one. So yeah, like Mike was saying, if you're in the neighborhood, if you're at the International Open, go along. Make sure your phone's fully charged. It's an Instagram account dream.
Yeah, it is.
Be able to get all these with all these legends. It's a good night.
But after midnight, it's got to go off.
Well, that's the nice thing about that. You know, they do make time for the Hall of Fame banquet at the International Open, where they stop play between 4 o'clock and 7 o'clock, and so we get in and we have our banquet relatively early in the evening, and then the players start back up at 7:30. So it's, you know, you can get your full fill at that event going to the tournament and the banquet. So yeah, everybody, you know, please consider it. It's a lot of fun.
Perfect. Well, is there anything else that you want to plug for anything, Mike?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's always fun being here.
Jim, you got anything to plug?
No.
You didn't you win that that league you played in? Did I see your name up there?
I think it's more important we mention who came second.
Was it Tyler, right?
It was Tyler. Yeah. Tyler started second in a very good league that I won. Yeah. No, yeah. No, I played good. Yeah.
So what's your record now against Tyler Steyer? Does that bring it to 3-0?
Unbeaten.
I think you're 3-0 against Tyler now.
He's not that good, is he?
No big deal.
He's got a break. He's the guy's got a break, but if you take that away from him, then I think I'm living in his head, just making a mess in there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it must be.
Got in
not
his head.
Too bad, huh? Not too bad.
Yeah, destroy but so I'll be putting some stuff on once the next session gets arranged and the dates come out. Then I'm going to share some stuff on Facebook. I think I'm probably going to work a little bit with the organization and try and spread it a little bit throughout Europe. There's a few European players in there, but it's mainly based in Canada and the States at the moment. So try and spread the word and help these guys out. It's a Q Sport Live, CSLIPL League. And it's good fun, well-run Ghost League, and a little bit of money to be earned. But more importantly, you just get a little bit of practice and a little bit of competition. And yeah, it was good. Enjoyed it. And beat Tyler. Hey.
Well, good on you, pal. The only thing that, but I do want you to know, Jim, that the only reason that you're even invited is this, so that we can see your daughter. So why don't you bring her over here? I can see her running around back there.
She's avoiding you. I said, I'm going to be speaking to you. I said to her, are you going to watch a film on the iPad? Because I need to go over here and I'm going to speak to Nate. Oh, no, I need to speak to Nate. And she says, well, make sure you go over there and do it then. So I'm like, I've been moved over here while she's sitting on the comfortable chairs. So,
there you go.
Yeah, sorry, mate.
That's my sad face, Jim.
Do you want to wave to Nate? Oh, she's going to come over.
Oh, of course she is. Now that she knows she can, of course she's going to come over and say hi. We're like best friends at this point, Jim. Hi.
We wave.
Hiya.
She has to go to bed in a minute. You've kept me here too long.
She has the same laugh as you, Jim.
Yeah.
You got a unicorn?
That's a unicorn. Two of them.
A nice unicorn.
Nice dueling unicorns.
And this is where we're at. This is what you get here at Cue It Up Network.
That's right.
Talk about, so we've got kids there. I'm surprised you don't have your cat's butt on your screen.
I was going to say, you get kids and cats.
Kids and cats. What you get with us. What you got for us, Mike? It's your turn.
A couple bottle of booze back there.
We got a bottle of booze. Yeah. You can shake up, mix a cocktail for us.
That I can do.
Oh, there you have it. Now this is where we're at in the podcast. I guess we're pretty much done, aren't we?
It's a full service podcast.
You know, the pool world needs a little spark in it, so this is okay, I think.
Yeah.
And if not, then I don't know, go over to the Booth Brothers or something. We don't want you here. You don't want funness.
Yeah, go watch Club Island.
But they're awesome too, so you should support them and watch them. So all right. Well, let's wrap this up then, fellas. Appreciate you joining me. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, watching, sharing, doing what you need to do as far as getting us out there. We appreciate it. And Jim, thanks, buddy.
You're welcome. Anytime, pal. Anytime. Just let me know more than 10 minutes before and I'll be ready.
Well, if fine. Mike, but I give Mike 10 minutes heads up, and he doesn't care. He's just like, all right, sure, yeah. So,
yeah. Always happy to join in. Appreciate you having me.
Yep, it's good fun.
All right, well, take care, everybody. Thanks again for tuning in, and till next time.
See ya.
Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Queue It Up podcast.